This morning's reading, instead of a gospel reading, I chose a passage from Isaiah because it really deals with what we're celebrating in terms of the candles this morning. This little insert in the bulletin, by the way, is we will have one of these each Sunday of Advent, and basically has different approaches to looking at today, the idea of hope, the different ways of considering it and different things to do. Some of it will be practical, some of it will strike you, and some of it will not, but that's okay. It's a kind of a general publication just to kind of keep us hopefully thinking through the week. But in the light of that, I chose to go with Isaiah this morning because it ties in beautifully with the theme of hope. Now, back in the days of Isaiah, which is like the 7th century B.C., Israel had been used to having other nations come in and take over, and they lived under occupation for so many centuries. Well, just before the Persian invasion of the Babylonians came in, there was a lot of skirmishing going on, and Israel up to that point had celebrated a long period of time when they had their own king, prior to having King David, whom they prayed for a lot. The leadership was really the prophets, and then before the prophets were the judges, people who were indicated to be the leaders for the time, and they did their term and they left. But now they had a king, they wanted to be like everyone else, and so they have King David and a whole line of kings going forward. We are now in the time of King Ahaz, and Ahaz was a very weak person. And knowing that the Persians were on his doorstep, he decided that, against what the prophet was suggesting, that they would form a military defense, and they would battle with Ahaz and his army, which far outnumbered their own. The wisdom of the prophets told him that basically what they should do is trust in God, not in the armaments. And so, of course, Ahaz gets tricked and the whole nation falls apart. But prior to all that happening, Isaiah speaks to King Ahaz and to the people of the time, knowing that the doom was coming. It was very obvious to him. But he says this, and this is a passage that is used later on by Matthew to underscore that the Messiah, their promised king, finally did come. Their hope was for a new ruler, a ruler who would put aside all the usual political nonsense and lead them to the nation as one bonded together in God. That was their wish, and this is his prophecy. In that time, there will be no gloom for those who were in anguish. In the former time, he brought into contempt the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, but in the latter time, he will make glorious the way of the sea, the land beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. The people who once walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shone. You have multiplied the nation. You have increased its joy. They rejoice before you as the joy at the harvest, as people exult when dividing plunder. For the yoke of their burden and the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressors, you have broken, as on the day of Midian. For all the boots of the trampling warriors and all the garments rolled in blood shall be burned as fuel for the fire. For a child has been born to us, a son is given to us, authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His authority shall grow continually, and there shall be endless peace for the throne of David and his kingdom. He will establish and uphold it with justice and integrity from this time onward and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. The word of the Lord. So many times when we consider the commonality of what we are and who we are as people, we skip over some, I think, the more important insights about the human race and the development of the human family. Besides our bodies and our natural instincts and all the things that make us human, one of the things that we share as experience is a darkness or a challenge or something that makes us stop and think that maybe the world isn't all as good as we thought. Some little thing that may come into our lives as children, some disappointment, some failure in school or disappointment to family or people who love us. Some small thing makes us realize that it's not always going to be wonderful. The reality is, now all of us in this room have lived long enough, I think, to know that. The reality is that there are going to be challenges and struggles in every life. You know, before I was married, before I was a priest, when I was a priest, I used to give these homilies at weddings and had this idea that it was really true, that basically when two people got married, it was like a Disney experience, that they left the church and were off for a life of wonderful splendor, and they were going to live happily ever after. And then I got married. Yeah, I can say that she's not here, right? No, she taught me many things. This she taught me. No, she's got sciatica, so she's been laid low this week. But when I got married, I thought it was very interesting that my idea, my fantasy about marriage really changed considerably. And I had to learn something that I had never really had to learn before. And that was sometimes living well and good life doesn't always feel good. That we can be doing very, very well. And our relationship can be wonderful. And, you know, life is going along and everything is really very, very positive. But sometimes, even when it's going right, it doesn't feel good. Because you have differences and there are tensions. And there are things that happen that cause both of you to step back a bit and reassess and evaluate. And sometimes it can get very heavy. So after I was married, I began to tell couples who came to me for a marriage preparation, now understand something. You're going to have bad days, but that doesn't mean anything except that you're alive. Bad days don't mean the end of anything. I thought, I don't know if she told you, I think she told some of you guys the other day. We were married about 2 weeks, I guess. And she came home from work, and she had a big job at the hospital. She had 17 women working for her, and she was stressed out of her mind. And so she came, we were living in a condo at the time, and she came pounding up the stairs. And I'm all ready to greet her, as I usually do. And she came in, and she looked wild. She had fire in her eyes, and I said, oh, God. So she vented, and I let her vent, mostly because I was scared to say anything. And she went on and on and on. When she got all through, I said, well, why don't you quit? Then she exploded. Are you crazy? I need to be able to come home and lay things out, blah, blah, blah. And I learned another lesson there. Because I thought, after she finished, I said, well, I guess we'll be getting a divorce. After she chewed me out, we'll get a divorce now. What are you talking about? It was our real first disagreement. But the interesting thing is, those simple little things remind us about our humanity. And there are some small things that will happen all the way through our lives, and then you hit the big ones. You hit the big valleys. You hit the big dark cloud that just came over your whole life. And you enter those moments where perhaps you're wondering, why am I here? Have you ever had a day when you thought deep down inside, maybe you voiced it, maybe not, why was I born? I've had those. I had lots of those. Experiences that bring us to our knees and things that are just not understandable, darknesses that don't seem ever that they're going to lift. To talk about hope, we need to talk a little bit about our attitudes and how we perceive life. I want to back up to something I said on Tuesday night. We were talking about Thanksgiving. And in talking about giving thanks, I suggested that it's easy for us to thank people, to feel thankful for the things that we receive, to extend ourselves in thanks for the things that people have done for us, to look at the world and say, you know, on Thanksgiving Day, you know, the family's here with all the bugaboos and all the tensions and all the wonderful love and all the joy we can bring to the table. We are thankful for that. We're thankful for friends. We're thankful for our children and grandchildren. We're thankful for life. And if it's a good day, we can look up at the sky and thank God for the world. But that's not really thanks. Not real thanks. Real thanks lead us to a deeper gratitude. And gratitude involves an attitude of life that allows me the perspective to see the whole picture. I was thankful for marriage before I got married. I am grateful for marriage today because it has so transformed who I am and my perception of the world. And how I am in a position today, as never before, to see the bigger picture about life. Each one of us, I think, however we grow, however we mature, may find ourselves getting so used to a way of life that it removes us from some of the other realities of life. Some of the delights, some of the wonderful, beautiful experiences, but also some of the challenges and some of the pain and suffering that surrounds us. We can find ourselves living in a nice little place where we are comfortable. And because we are there and it is comfortable, it is more devastating when somehow we have to move away from that because tragedy hits. Gratitude allows us to see life, the whole of life, all of it, the pluses, the minuses, the good, the bad, the ugly, the nonsensical, the rational, the levity and the harshness and the sorrows as one experience. And from a place of gratitude, we are present to each one of those circumstances in a way that does not remove our sense of gratitude. Not that we are ever grateful for sadness, for sorrows, for pain, but we are grateful that the experience of those things broadens our appreciation of the world around us, but even better, broadens our appreciation of who we really have become. And the same thing, I think, is true with hope. When we talk about hope, many times we talk about being optimistic. You know, in the front of the bulletin this morning, I think on the first page, there's a little thing that I found, I don't know, someplace. And it's about a man who falls into a hole. And you read all the different approaches. We are, each one of us, one of those approaches. You know, sometimes we can be rational. Somebody falls into a hole and we say, well, that's okay. You know, it'll be all right. It'll pass. Optimism is one of the worst things, I think, that I experience in my life when somebody comes and says, I'm really feeling bad. If it's a child who just lost her doll, that's critical for a child. And to say, that's okay, we'll buy another one, doesn't really address the struggle that the child's having. Or to someone who gets a divorce and say, well, you know, a lot of people get divorced today, there's no problem. And what about the kids? Hey, there's millions of kids that live in divorced families. There are all kinds of ways to be addressing those kinds of situations. But all of them have their own particular baggage or their own particular perspective. And so being optimistic is wonderful. But being what they call, what's in a little Susie sunshine, you know, little Mary sunshine, on a cloudy day is an irritant to somebody who's having a hard time. And easy solutions like, well, God will give you the grace. The one that gets me all the time. And I apologize to anybody if you've ever said this to me. I don't think you have. But having had a lot of troubles and being with a lot of troubled people, when somebody says, God doesn't give us any more than we can handle, that's a devastating thing to say to someone. And listening to some of the things that I've listened to over the many years that I've been in ministry, of people going through experiences of life, from murders and deaths of children and terrible diseases and disappearing relatives and children born dead and having to go through funerals with all these different groups of people and the aftermath, the struggle and the pain. And some women, I know, I was down at Sacred Heart not long ago, one of the mothers of a student I had when I was there who died of cancer, to this day, has not gotten past the death of her daughter. In fact, when we were down there, I saw her and I said hello to her, and she remembered me, of course, because I probably traumatized her by saying something inane. And she said, you know, I still miss Melissa. I said, I'm sure you do. Whoever gets over the loss of a child, whoever gets over, fully gets over the loss of someone you love, you don't. So I think it's audacious and almost arrogant for somebody like me to stand in a pulpit and read some part of scripture at a funeral or even on a Sunday morning, looking over a large crowd of people, as if the people sitting in front of me are able to really hear what the gospel is saying. The end of this story in here, Jesus comes by and pulls the guy out of the pit. And that's wonderful. And having been in a caring professional all my life, we too can try to be Jesus to everybody. But unfortunately, the Messiah came a long time ago, and he's no longer here. We're not supposed to be the Messiah. Who are we supposed to be? I think, like everything else, especially Thanksgiving and gratitude, hope is one of those things that we somehow grow into that allows us not to be Pollyanna at any time or optimistic all the time, but realistically able to look at the quality of our lives and all the details of our lives and just breathe and say, yes, this is my life. This has been my life. And I have scars to show, and I have wounds, and I have some things that still haven't healed, and I still have pain, and I look back on some of the things that took place, perhaps that I even generated, and the pain is still there, and the memory lives on. But that is my life. I don't want to pretend that that is not my life, nor do I want to wish for somebody else's life, thinking that they're in a much better place than I am. Do you ever do that? What looks nice on the other side of the fence may not necessarily be nice at all. The truth is, brothers and sisters, God gave us a reason to rejoice in our lives. And as I said about gratitude, unless I can begin to see my own self as God's gift, that the person that I am and the person I have become is God's gift for me, that God doesn't give to anybody else, it's mine. And when I can grab hold of that reality and begin to appreciate my place in this vast reality, then I will never, ever, ever have peace. But when I can do that, I can live with a gratitude about life that includes the bad stuff that happens, the mistakes that I make, the errors, the failures, all the things that happen. It's a part of my life. Unfortunately, we've been given a message that there's good and there's not good. And that duality keeps us always seeing the small stuff that may be wrong as big things to hang on to that I can never get over, that weighs me down, and miss all the other stuff, which we take for granted. Hope. Hope comes, brothers and sisters, when we go to a place where we recognize the fullness of the life that God has given us. Not the way people perceive it, not the way the world appears to be for us, who we really are, the whole of us. And from that place, begin to look at the world outside. And what we look outside to see, what we find, is a lot of people with a lot of joys and a lot of problems. And a world that seems to be fraught with stronger or powerful horrors than we ever dreamed. And it is not ours to fix. It is not ours to somehow excuse or rationalize. It is ours simply to be. However we encounter it, one-on-one, one-on-four, with a little bit of hope that that person too, because we are together, will have the courage to look at his life or her life as a gift, the whole of it. Not as punishment for what I didn't do, not as punishment for the sins I committed, not as somehow God has a thing about me and doesn't like me. The whole of my life is God's gift. And so let us, as we lit the candle this morning, we will pray at the end of the service that as we go forward, we may be a light in the darkness of someone's world. And that light will be much brighter if it is the whole of us caring for the one who has need. Amen.